I only learned, like, I don't know, a couple years ago, I think, that that comes from organs. Like
organs?
Organs, the devices that play music.
Oh. not the meat organs.
Pull
the stops out of that liver.
But the stops are the thing that control how loud stuff is. So you pull out all the stops is because you're making it really loud
with your organ power.
Dude, that's pretty. Yeah,
I didn't even know that until a few years
ago. It's very intense organ, like kind of a slang thing. Like,
yeah.
Pull out all the stops, Timothy, on that organ.
Now, Barbara really pulled out all the stops at church today and blasted us across the pews.
Right. Scotch. Shenanigan.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 233 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast, Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the game's programmer.
I'm Adam, and I'm a wet robot in a leather bag.
Let's go. Sam.
This is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is November 14th, 2019. Before we get started.
Wait, is it? I'm reeling from this mental image that Adam shoved into my brain.
We're all just wet robots covered in leather.
Ugh.
I told my wife this a couple nights ago, and she did not like it that much.
Yeah, it's a gross thing to say to someone.
I wanted to share it with the rest of the community. You know?
But the good thing is that you got some weird hard stuff in there that keeps the
keeps the leather sack
in the right shape.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's good. You got that going for you. Nice. At least you're not an octopus, which is
cool underwater, though.
Yeah, maybe better in some scenarios, to be honest. You know. Because then you're just a wet leather bag.
Do, for real. Is there such a thing as octopus leather? Is that a – I don't think their
I'm
skin
sure
is
– I'm sure there is. There's got to be octopus leather.
That's going to make some real fancy boots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That have good traction on the
– Problem is you put them on, you'll never be able to see your feet again.
There's that.
Wait, why? Oh, right, because they change color. And because your feet stick to the ground.
Yeah.
And now you got to
so
leave
now your feet
behind.
Are gone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you could use this to climb walls and be in disguise.
Mm-hmm. Octopus leather boots, baby.
How come that's not in any RPGs?
I don't know.
It will.
It will be.
It will be. Be the change you want to see
that's
in
right.
the world.
Yeah.
Before we get started any further, we have a warning. We're probably going to swear sometimes. So just, you know that that's coming your way.
I was just thinking how we all managed to not swear.
We did real good.
I think we were all acutely aware that we hadn't given the warning yet.
I am every time we give the warning, I'm imagining a person listening,
just like turning it off real
fast. Oh no, and then they turn it who is this a real person?
I don't
know. Do people do this?
Anytime I'm listening, and we could make fun of that person as much as we want now because they've already turned it off.
They're gone now.
Mm-hmm.
Or I listen to a podcast, they'd be like, "No, I have to warn you. We're gonna be explaining violence in this podcast episode." Like they'll talk, maybe they're reporting on something bad that happened or something. And they're like, "So, you know, just be sure to turn that off if you don't want to hear about that." And I'm thinking,
you're like, everyone came here for the violence.
Yeah.
Let's be real.
You say that and people are like, "Oh, I'm sticking around for this." You know? Yeah.
Maybe that's actually what it's
for. This story's about to get wild.
You know what I mean? It's just sort of a self-selection thing where you're like, "Hey, we're about to swear a whole lot." And everyone's like, "Oh boy, I'm ready."
No, it is the case. I mean,
if you have a young kid around, maybe.
But it's not even that. There are degrees of violence or kinds of violence.
Oh, yeah. Now, there's certain things I definitely don't want to hear about.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, the things that I listen to.
Yeah, because it's like NPR.
Yeah, they're not going to go into that.
Because I'm definitely not going to describe any details. But there have been a few of those stories that I read or like heard or something that like made
horrifying.
Me.
Yeah, but here's the problem. Here's the problem. Is if they say in advance, like, "No, we're going to be explaining some rough stuff."
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't know to turn it off.
Yeah, and you wouldn't be. Yeah,
I don't know how rough it's going to be.
It's not until after you hear it, you're like, "Wish I hadn't heard that."
Yep.
It's too late now.
Mm-hmm.
It's too late now. Also, we'd like to thank our recurring supporters over at moneygrab.bscash.net. Thanks for letting us grab your money. It's nice.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about Eat Shit, Bob.
Fill us in, Adam.
Yeah, so
Eat Shit, Bob.
Yesterday I got home. My wife and I were chatting and having dinner. And then she was like, "I heard that the Last Week Tonight, that TV show with John Oliver, was really good this week. So we should watch it." It's like, okay, cool. So we sat down and watched it. And it was like, I really enjoy the show, so it was like all the way through. But the part that apparently people were talking about was the end of this. And I'm not going to just go on at length about it here, except to say that it is probably the most glorious fuck you
to a jerk.
To a jerk.
Yeah.
The most satisfying one that I can't even think of a more
so
powerful
good.
One. Because in effect, there was just someone who was an asshole. And then specifically to John Oliver, basically their
and
TV
many
show,
other people.
And HBO. He's also an asshole to a whole bunch of people. And so they made an entire musical about just of made up things about this guy that are all just like messed up and, you know, horrifying things. Just made up this entire sequence of obvious lies because they know they're protected from real lawsuits. Mm-hmm. And the main issue with this guy is he files lots of frivolous lawsuits.
Yeah.
And so they just put this whole like really well organized, beautifully done musical number with like dancers, and they come out on the street, and like, and it's like, what? And it's
the costumes are spectacular.
It is just.
And John Oliver's singing.
John Oliver, and he sings well.
He did great.
Yeah.
I need to check this out. I haven't seen it yet.
It was just spectacular. And it ends with fireworks that go off up in the sky, and they spell out, "Eat shit, Bob." So really, this is just a recommendation.
I love it. I got to check it out.
Yeah, if you've not seen that.
Yeah, scope that out. It was
worth reading. I've been watching, listening to.
I'm going to read it. I'm going to read those words.
Watch that whole YouTube. I saw a comment on it where somebody said, this is what it looks like when the good guys have money and an eye for production.
Right, yeah. It really is. Like,
that's fair. So we're going to be traveling soon.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. Where are you going, Adam?
I'm going to Taiwan.
And you're going to be leaving less than a week from when we're recording this.
I'm leaving some unknown time.
The day this episode comes out.
No, some unknown time. Coming back unknown time because it's not a wise move to tell several thousand people when you're going to not be in your household. I don't know. You know what I mean?
That's true.
Security. So I may or may not be home.
Watch your eyes. He's got eyes everywhere, folks.
I got cameras everywhere. I got everything.
Cats.
And an attack cat. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he's got a house made of guns. Oh, no. I just told him what your house looks like.
Yeah. It is the gun house.
Mm-hmm.
But I have covered most of the guns in octopus leather. So you're going to get stuck and then shot.
Stuck in the worst.
I saw somebody made a comment about Home Alone. Mm-hmm. And how the whole time, I don't know if this is true because I haven't seen it for so long, but how the whole time he could have called the police but didn't. Which means he was there for blood. Yeah. He wanted to murder those robbers. And I thought that was very interesting.
He had read he understood the legal system enough to know
that it wasn't worth it.
If he could entice some predators into his house, and free game.
Them. Free game for murder.
Free game.
It was a stand your ground state at that time.
Yeah.
So he knew that as a 6-year-old.
McCulloch Hogan.
Yeah.
So that's pretty fucked up.
So what are you going to do?
So I'm going to be in Taiwan. I honestly don't know what I'm doing there. So this is a family trip.
Show up and be like, what?
I'm going to go wherever we go and do whatever I'm told, basically. So it's a family trip with my in-laws, and my mother-in-law is gracious enough to take us on these like big adventures every couple years that we otherwise wouldn't get to go on. And she travels literally constantly. So I think she left today to go to somewhere in Europe. Like, we're leaving literally next week to go to Taiwan.
I should go stop by.
She had just gotten back. From like, I don't know, some other country that was – so she just like can't stop moving.
What's she running from? It's a demon or a ghost.
So she travels all the time. And then we can do these things every once in a while. But most of what that means is that we get invited, and then we're just like, okay. Sure. And then there's a trip that happens, mm-hmm. and when we just basically show up and
– sounds great.
And then who knows what will happen.
Good deal.
It'll be fun.
Seth, where are you going?
I'm going to India. Going to Mumbai, India, formerly Bombay. If you know about Bombay, it's Mumbai now.
Yep.
And it probably was Mumbai originally. And then the British showed up and they're like, I don't know how to say this. And then they changed it.
Classic British.
Yeah. So I'm going there for some family stuff. Going to go to an Indian wedding, which is big. They're always big. Mm-hmm. They take days. There's a lot of events, mm-hmm. a lot of things to do with food. You eat food sometimes. Sometimes you throw the food. At people, we do that here too.
Yep.
You know, you grab a big handful of rice and you just hurl it with all your might.
You'll never get this out of your clothes.
Yeah. And like, that's good. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good thing.
Yep.
So it's going to be fun. Going to see lots of family, do stuff. Going to be there for a couple of weeks and then we're coming back. So
it's pretty rad.
Things are going to shut down in this house, in the studio.
Yeah. It's going to be
real quiet.
It's going to be cool.
Well, we do our Thanksgiving break for the studio. Around the same time every year too.
Yeah.
So that'll be happening. So everyone just leaves. And then we also have winter break coming up. So this is always this weird season because there's always a lot to do, but then it's very compressed because we basically just kind of like delete 3 weeks out of this kind of chunk of time.
Is there a word for a vacation that you become stressed because of it? And then when you come back, you're even more stressed than when you left?
For me, this is all vacations.
That's how I feel every vacation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's, you know, when I'm around, I can take care of shit, mm-hmm. get things done. Nothing's piling up. Everything's under control.
And you don't have to travel, and travel is just
unpleasant. I don't know. I've just accepted that things pile up, I feel like. You know?
Yeah.
Every week we go into production meeting, there's like 60 things somehow every 2 days
that we need to discuss. Yeah, but we also do 50 things every 2 days. Mm-hmm. And then once a month, we purge 300 things, right? Yeah. That's so now, fine. Now the math checks out.
Now we're gone for 2 weeks.
Now there's just 240 things that haven't been done.
None of them got purged.
And we just got to purge them all.
It's going to be wild.
We need a moratorium. Is that what it's called? We need to put a hold.
Yeah.
We need to
pull out all the stops. Yeah,
it's like no more jobs.
We need to push in all the stops.
Push the stops back in.
It's like a push pop sort of situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see what happens.
I only learned a couple years ago, I think, that comes from organs. Like
organs?
Organs, the devices that play music.
Oh. You know? not the meat organs.
Pull
the stops out of that liver.
But the stops are the thing that control how loud stuff is. So you pull out all the stops is because you're making it really loud.
With your organ power.
Dude, that's pretty. Yeah,
I didn't even know that until a few years
ago. It's very intense organ, like kind of a slang thing. Like,
yeah.
Pull out all the stops, Timothy, on that organ.
Now, Barbara really pulled out all the stops at church today and just blasted us across the pews. Right.
Very intense, very intense way to talk about that.
Yeah.
I like it.
Good. I dig it.
That makes – sometimes you learn the origin of a phrase and it's not nearly as cool as you thought it was going to be.
Yes,
this usually is way cooler.
It's the opposite of pumping the brakes, right? Because pumping the brakes when you're in a car – wait, no. Yeah, pumping the brakes.
You just kind of gently –
well, that's where you gently stop. Because I've actually tried pumping my brakes. You do not gently do anything.
Now, pumping the brake is what you do if you need to stop really fast, actually.
Well, your cars automatically do it now with the ABS brakes.
They got auto pump mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's always terrifying when that happens.
Yeah, you hit it and it just like keeps
– it kind of like kicks in and out, mm-hmm. and you think your car is going to, melt. Yeah, I don't really know how cars – I assume they have a melting
temperature
feature
or something.
Yeah, it must be somewhere. Yeah,
they have some – I don't know what their gas phase – like mm-hmm. the phase plane diagram. You know? I don't know where they turn into a gas.
Yeah, it's probably pretty hot. Real though. Annoying. You're driving. Yeah. Your car's vaporized.
Gets too hot.
The thing is, with global warming, soon we'll all have gas cars.
Hey, did you hear about Venice being completely underwater?
Nice. I saw some videos.
Under 6 feet of water.
Yeah. I heard it was after they voted on a resolution to say that global warming didn't exist.
Is that for real or is that just like
I think that was an actual thing.
I'm sure people are doing that all the time anyway.
Yeah, so that's exactly
it. Statistically, it probably would have worked out that way no matter what.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably not going to be the last time that happens in the near future.
Nope.
So I wonder what they're going to do about that.
Rename themselves Atlantis and turn into a tourist destination.
It's kind of weird because it's like it's the city that is should be really well equipped to handle being underwater because like it is, you know, like it's already the case that their streets are rivers in a lot of cases. So it should be a pretty minor sort of shift.
The reality is that nobody's city is equipped for being underwater. You know what I mean?
But they'd be the closest.
They would be the closest.
Anyways, all right, let's talk about Levelhead. We are doing a whole bunch of cool stuff in the game and stuff that we think is cool, but that probably
and the nerds among you will think is cool.
And if we gotten any nerds out there,
oh man,
you're going to be like, oh shit. Like one of the things, which I won't go into detail of because of, the nerds,
mm-hmm.
but I got the save frequency of Levelhead from 32 saves a minute down to 11.
Yeah.
Wow.
Fucking dope.
Wow, wow, wow.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Required a whole rebuild of every game system, basically.
And you may be asking yourself, but why?
But why? Well, some devices require that you don't write to the disk too often or else you can't put your game on those devices.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Turns out that Levelhead was probably doing a bit too much.
Coming from phones and PC, it's just the Wild West for us when it comes to writing to disk.
For us, it's basically anytime something changes, we'd be like, ooh, you just earned a coin in this level. We better save that. Because if you lose power, if whatever, you don't want to lose any progress.
Yeah, it's just there now.
But apparently on pretty much any other device other than a phone or a desktop computer.
Got to do things in batch.
Yeah, you do things in these big batches. And so if you do something and then immediately close the device, that's lost. That's gone.
Yep.
And you know this if you play games on consoles and you see they have those little save icons.
Yeah, they're always like, don't you dare touch
the
button.
Turn off your device while this is happening. Mm-hmm. So it turns out Levelhead was not really equipped for that at all. But now it is.
Now it is.
So we got those kinds of fun things happening.
Yep.
And then we're also putting a lot of energy into the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So for those of you who listened to the previous episode, you'll know that we're coming to Xbox Game Pass, which means there's going to be some people playing this game. Yep. And they're going to be going into the campaign first and foremost. At the beginning of development, we had this vision for the campaign of being this, well, essentially a standalone game.
Yeah.
Right? Where we said, we don't have the lore or IP of an existing franchise to lean on to make our maker game, unlike some other
people.
Companies. Mm-hmm. So we have to both establish the lore, establish the characters, establish the story, do that in a compelling way, and have the maker part and everything else, right? Yeah. And I think up until now, we've had just like the core of it. We've got the levels in the campaign,
yeah.
But the rest was not.
We have the main menu setting, which sort of totally yeah. puts you in a place literally, which is good.
Yeah.
And then with the opening sort of presentation, it just sort of sets the scene. But then after that, it's like you just kind of wander out there. Yep. And so
– yeah, we got a lot of comments from people in early access who were like, I beat the whole campaign and then
– and nothing happened.
Nothing happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't
the campaign wasn't done yet. Yeah.
So basically what we've been working on now is that opening presentation is actually sort of served as the blueprint for a bunch of additional presentations that will be going through the whole campaign. And so the idea is to make it a combination of – you know, the campaign is both – it's mainly actually a teaching tool to make sure people know both what the content in the game has to offer as well as see some good examples of it sort of being deployed. But then beyond that, we want it to be the case that it's just, you know, it's fun enough to interact with by itself and rewarding enough. And so on that line, we've done two things. And one is we went from the original conception of having like maybe five-ish presentations to Seth's actually building out a tool. And this is a big part of dev, which is identifying when you need to expand capacity in something and move just beyond, for example, like hard coding it, which the first presentation is.
The first time you do anything, you just code it up.
Right. But the important note here is we had this discussion about it. And basically what it revealed was that it would be very easy once this tool is made to make more than just a couple of these. And that's great because I was sort of sweating trying to figure out how to make just five presentations that somehow were different enough but interesting enough. It sort of like put a lot of burden on each
and
one
not
of them.
Too long.
And not too long, but also now you don't have a lot of time. So it was this really weird thing which got solved by basically building this tool that allows these to be built much faster. And so now there's going to be somewhere between like 19 and 22 of them depending on how many go in. Yeah. And I wrote all of them last week and I'll be editing them down like in the next coming days before going to actually record them.
Is that going to make the downloaded file size like 10 times bigger?
Probably.
Yeah.
Nice.
Watch out.
Well, so yeah, each one is going to have a, you know, 1 or 2 minute long audio file, which that's where most of the file size of the game comes from.
Well, they're basically audio. Like they're almost all max a minute because I basically set a couple parameters for myself as far as how fast and how punchy they need to be because the whole goal is just that they are these sort of – they're just kind of charming and weird and fun little updates about your progress in the Bureau, about your GR18 or about how the world works. And so they just kind of get sprinkled in throughout the whole campaign and hopefully break it up in a way that's really, really fun. Especially, you know, we know that some of the campaign levels are hard. And so you can imagine like beating, for example, the final level in the whole campaign, like something should happen to sort of symbolize that has happened. And so that's kind of what we're working on over here.
Yes.
So this is all going to be coming into the 1.0 part of the product. And part of that is that you can't, this is one of those things that, you can't re-experience it once, right? Like the first time.
So we got to nail it.
So we got to nail it, and then we just wanted to drop it on everybody once the game goes live. And so it's again, it's kind of weird that these things have to happen so far in advance, but this also has to get localized into 11 different languages, and also their stuff has to happen. So there's kind of a lot going into all these, but I think it's going to be – it'll be well worth it in terms of setting the game apart and making it – putting it very thoroughly into the butterscotch universe of just being weird and wacky and fun.
Yeah, now it'll have a story.
Yeah.
It'll have a story, and or at least in the meantime, we've also added – benchmark times of the campaign where basically Sam went through and speed ran the campaign. Well, probably not to the degree of what some people are capable of.
Probably not flan speed.
No, but I did not flan speed the campaign.
Yeah,
flan
run. But after, you know, almost 2 years working on this game, Sam's pretty damn fast. Mm-hmm. So went through the whole campaign in like 3 hours and then established benchmark times for all the levels in the campaign. And then we added those in as a new system. So now when you play each level, you see a little – sort of like we call it the on-time delivery, which is you get a bonus if you deliver the package on time, which means basically you speed ran the level.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those times are really hard.
Yeah. Well, the goal is that the campaign itself has multiple layers and kinds of replayability, and we already have that a bit with the collectibles, right? And collectibles are fun because you can kind of come back and get them at your own pace. Like there's not anything else happening about it. But that was all we had as far as reinforcing that replayability. And so the benchmarks, it really is a weird thing, but it's so intense when you come back in. You're like, I need to get below 30 seconds in this level. And then you're just trying. Like, you're just trying so hard. And it's just very fun. It's a completely different way to play, essentially. So I'm really pumped for what it'll do for everybody. I know people have been wanting this for a long time. So
yeah, it's going to be great. And then we've got – so we got that. And
is there like a final time too for –
maybe
like is there a the total time for like how long it took you to
we have talked in the past about creating some kind of a speed run mode where you actually do have to play through the whole thing almost like what the tower trial is where you play through all the levels back to back. We haven't done that yet, but also there's like 90 something levels, which it would take a while.
Takes some hours sitting.
So we haven't really dug into that too much, but that is kind of like in the back of our minds.
Yeah, like post-launch project some sort.
And then we've also, for those of you who played Levelhead earlier, you saw that we had all these little things in the campaign that you could unlock items in. Mm-hmm. So those are making a comeback.
Yep. Don't worry, though. We're not putting workshop items in there.
No workshop
maniacs.
Items.
So, but we are locking avatars in there. So we added an additional 140 avatars to the game. Or no.
We're up to 100.
Up to 140 now.
Yeah. So we added 100 something new ones.
And then most of those, the vast majority of them are inside of the campaign now. So actually you'll be unlocking them sort of as you go. And it's just sort of, again, one of those fun things to have little rewards sprinkled about here and there. And most of them are oriented around challenge points. So it's, you know, it's not just, did you beat this level? It's, did you collect the Giratine? Did you get the bugs? Did you like sort of do something interesting on it in order to unlock a suite of avatars about it? So those are all integrated as well. So yeah, the campaign's sort of getting a really big bunch of updates here that should finally put it closer to where we wanted it to be in terms of, you know, final product,
which
is really good.
And we got some visual updates that are coming too, but we're not going to show or say anything more about that.
Nobody.
Because we want to just dunk it on everybody. Mm-hmm. And I think the nice thing about the icon unlocks is it brings the campaign back to what we wanted at the beginning, which is you get cool shit for achieving things in the campaign. But now
– And we also want it to be coupled to the system of making levels, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the now problem was by getting content that you used to make levels, then that was what created the problem.
And you can use these icons or avatars to market and promote your levels, and they're like trophies, right? And you can also change your own avatar with them, so that way you yourself can show off some cool thing that you achieved.
Yeah.
So that's – I feel like it really comes back and hits the original design intent without sort of – undercutting the whole point of the game,
right?
Which is being able to build stuff in the workshop.
Yep.
So we have a lot more stuff coming. We're actually only, what are we, a week out from the patch?
I don't even know how time works anymore. I have no idea.
Yeah, I think so.
Right? Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, we
think so.
So we put the patch out a week ago of this recording. We've already done all that shit. So
it's good because then we're going to be gone for
We're going to be gone for a couple weeks. So like this patch is, I think we actually have 3 work weeks for this patch.
Yeah, it's real weird.
Out of 5. So anyway, we'll just have some more info about that later on. All right. And I think the only other thing to talk about is Google Stadia.
Oh, yeah. So, what about it? What's going on?
So what is it?
Google Stadia.
Is that clear yet?
I think – have we talked about
– We've talked about it. We've
Google Stadia is coming November 19th.
So yeah. The pitch for it is that it allows you to play a game that is of extremely intense fidelity because it requires a lot of CPU or GPU – on any device you want because it actually streams it to the device instead of requiring the device to play it itself.
Yeah.
So in other words, you're actually remote playing on one of Google's machines is the easy way to think about it. The interesting thing was they sort of took over GDC last year.
We talked about that at length. Dominated that whole floor.
And then since then, there's more marketing that's been going toward it. And so the word about it is spreading, but everyone's still kind of confused about what's happening.
Yeah.
And so then Adam, you said there was an update recently.
They haven't done a lot to help with the confusion because it's not going to be obvious to a person how they can actually get it. Like how do you, because it doesn't,
it's not a console.
It's just on the internet. It's not a console. And the idea, like the original idea of the thing is that you ought to be able to literally just like open up your Chrome browser or something just on whatever machine you're on your phone, on whatever, and just start playing a thing. It's like, it's supposed to be that streamlined, right? But out of the gate, it's not. And in fact, most of the features that are going to be part of this that make it what it is, that make it stand out from everything else, aside from just the streaming part, are apparently not coming out at launch, which they basically announced yesterday what the launch features are. And they're launching with only 12 games.
Yeah, that was, I saw that list come out.
And yeah,
I
was they're like, launching with 12 games, and one of them is an exclusive.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's good at least.
They got one.
So yeah. they got one exclusive in there. And they're launching with good titles, definitely.
Assassin's Creed is in there. I mean, like, there's...
Yeah, I think Doom is in it.
Yeah, there's definitely some good stuff.
Yeah, so there's good stuff in there, definitely. But it's a very, very small selection, which isn't inherently bad or anything, but it's just kind of interesting that they're launching with this really small selection of games and with this tiny selection of features. And so... And the thing that makes it so cool is it's this idea that no matter how difficult or how computationally complex a game is, you can play it. That's kind mm-hmm. of – that's idea number one. But then idea number two is it is now an internet native platform, yes. right? So that it can integrate with YouTube and it can integrate with anything. And you can follow a link and then like find yourself suddenly in the middle of a level that is – or in the middle of gameplay where that link determined what aspect of the gameplay you were in. And like there's all this like cool stuff. Yeah, there's
really
stuff,
weird, right? trippy, like futuristic stuff.
Yeah.
Because like if you were watching a YouTube video of your favorite YouTuber and they're playing it and you right. just clicked – on the video, and yeah. now you're literally playing the game at that exact
position. Point. Or if an ad comes up and you for a game and you click it, now you're just playing a demo.
Yeah,
or
whatever. It's a lot of weird, cool
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, so it's very neat. But apparently, they're launching with literally just none of that. So it's like
things we talked about in the past was how it's hard to tell whether those features are actually positives.
Yeah,
just because of the mental Correct. Overhead of playing a game, learning a game, all that stuff. The idea of being like just randomly seeing a game for the first time and just suddenly being in it, like just being in
well,
the middle of it.
We already have this on mobile because yep. mobile ads invented the idea, right? Of giving you a demo of a game as a pop-up ad inside of a game mm-hmm. that you then have to like play for a moment before you can get back to the game you were in, right?
Yeah.
So we already have this concept, but it hasn't lived in like just like the native internet, you know, like via a browser. It's all very – I think it's very cool tech. Everybody I've talked to in other – segments of the industry who deal with cloud computing and stuff are just as confused as I am about the economics of this because the amount of streaming required is very because they're streaming, you know, 4K resolution if you're in because there's a few tiers of payment, but in one of those tiers you're basically streaming 4K, and the whole thing about bragging about all the compute resources you get is great, except someone's got to pay for those compute resources, mm-hmm. right? And so if you are playing on the equivalent, so like if you imagine going right to a cloud provider like Google or like AWS or something and saying, hey, I need a server and describing a server that they're now talking about, right? That has that degree of specs, that degree of that much power. You're talking, you're going to be spending like dollars an hour mm-hmm. for compute resources just to actually do that, right?
But if they're charging like 10 bucks a month or whatever.
Right. Like it just seems like the economics don't work. And so
– unless they're assuming that it's going to – not be compelling enough for people to play it for more than 20 minutes.
So somehow they must have decided it's going to work out somehow. And I don't know if maybe they're –
or they're just taking it as a loss for
– and they may take it as a loss for a while. But also, of course, because of the fact that they own enormous amounts of server resources, then those server resources have, you know, peak hours and off-peak hours mm-hmm. and so on. And so they could actually use like – because they're always going to have extra capacity.
You're saying they're going to have machines that are just sitting there anyways.
Yeah. So it might be that they – because, of course, they don't have to pay for their own machines like the rest – I mean they have to
– They already did.
But they already paid for their machines. Yeah. And so they don't actually have an hourly rate. Then maybe the economics of it still work out or something. But
– all to say
– I don't know.
What is going to happen when this actually comes out?
Well, that's the thing is like it didn't – since it – they put all this marketing effort behind it, and they finally – and they're kind of like launching it quietly.
They're always weird about it. Like they made like a ton of noise about it.
Some of the features.
A ton really of noise weird, about it, GDC. Yeah. And then now it's actually coming out, and I'm like – it just feels very subdued.
It feels anticlimactic, yeah. right? And there's no – like it doesn't feel like they're – like the splash that it should have had given all the hype. Yeah.
But honestly, like when was a time that Google did like a dramatic reveal of a product?
Well, the thing is, this is how Google does stuff.
They're just like, I don't know.
The only time was when they announced Stadia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the only time I can think of that Google actually like
– did something flashy.
Did something really flashy about, you know, launching of a product. You know?
Yeah. And it's possible that like the only reason we felt that it was flashy was because it was right there next to us.
Yeah, that's true.
It was at GDC.
Oh, yeah. We saw it in person.
You know? Yeah. Like if we hadn't been at GDC, we may not have – Yeah. thought about it in those mm-hmm. terms. Yeah, yeah, I don't know. This every company out there wants to have the next platform.
Yes.
Like the next – because if you think about what Apple did with the iPhone, mm-hmm. where they sort of just came in guns blazing and just laid down a whole new market, like yep. this mobile gaming market and the app market and everything. And then Android caught up and BlackBerry died and
Microsoft
dipped a toe in and they were like, ooh, that's too hot. And then they ran away. mm-hmm. But – but it has defined an entire generation of business. You know, you've got,
well, and it created a market that's, I don't know what the market value of like the entire iTunes ecosystem, the App Store ecosystem is, but it's got to be the hundreds of billions of dollars, right? And Apple just gets to have 30% of
it. They just get a third of it.
Yep. For every year, they just get to, so they created a market that is much bigger than almost any other market in the fucking planet.
Well, I think this is why you can see why.
They just made it out of nothing.
Yeah, this is why you can see the reality of like the reason why a company would be interested in trying to do this.
The payoff is huge.
Yeah, if you have the ability to shoulder the cost, which Google certainly does, of like trying to do something crazy like this, then yeah, you're going to try to do it. Because if it's the bet that wins, then
– yeah. Well, I think that is it. Google is really the first into this space in a big way. And so I think this is going to answer the question, like, is this the future that we're going to have? And did Google actually get there first? And did they do it in a way that's going to allow them to stay in the lead, right? Because what we've also seen from these kinds of markets, because it already is the case right now that Microsoft is already trying to catch up. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure AWS is doing stuff too in some capacity. I'm pretty sure PlayStation's also.
I mean, everyone's
doing it.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, like, everyone was doing this with VR like 5 years ago. Now VR is just like a quiet thing. So I don't know. There's always that question of like, what's the actual reality of this in terms of sticking power in the long term? I don't know.
I don't understand it.
But it's interesting. The main premise is interesting though, right? Because the idea is, no matter what device you have, you can now play awesome games, right? We already have game playing devices in our pockets anyway, and a lot of the whole idea of this is that you can take your phone and play all of these games, right? We already have infinite games at our fingertips, so it's going to change the scale of the game.
Right. It's literally just changing the graphics.
That's it.
The thing that separates these games from other games is the graphics.
But this is a time limited thing, right? Because people aren't making better and better phones every year because people want to play games on them. Right, they're making because that's how you sell them. Right. You sell them by making them better every year, and so the rate at which phones as technology have been like catching up to consoles in particular, but then also just regular old desktop computers, right, is fucking remarkable. And so this is interesting, like investing this much effort to be able to like have a AAA quality experience
when you can already play Grand Theft Auto on your phone.
Like we're only a few years away from I don't know. It's interesting.
I don't know. I mean, I feel the same about this as I felt about VR in 2015, was it?
It was earlier. I think 2014.
There was just all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Everybody just collectively shat their pants about VR. Mm-hmm. The Oculus Rift appeared on the scene. They did a Kickstarter, right?
Yes.
At the beginning, and then they turned it into a real thing.
Got bought by Facebook, all that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And everybody kept talking about how like VR is gonna – it's just going to be where games go. And nobody really solved the two core problems, which is people vomit when they use it and you need a 10-by-10-foot room to do stuff.
Well, the third problem is people don't like strapping something to their face.
People don't like having something strapped to their face.
The use is just weird.
Right. So so you can have the graphical fidelity of real life in this thing and if it doesn't touch those three core problems, then it just doesn't matter.
Right? Yep.
And so the thing that I'm trying to figure out with the Stadia thing is just like, who has the problems that are being described by the people who are offering these solutions?
Mm-hmm. I think that's what I'm so curious about, because it's fun to watch this in a lot of ways and not have to participate. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and also think about like who – so one thing that I'm pretty confident in is that like young people, teenagers – college students, they're the ones who drive a lot of the demand for a lot of the newer stuff, right? What games has this generation of basically people under 20? What are the core defining games of this generation? Freaking Minecraft and Fortnite.
Yep.
These are not – and mobile games on iPads, right? Like these are not people
– Yeah, and Fortnite can run on anything now.
Yep.
Yeah. Like these are not people who are banging down the doors for photorealistic graphics in their games. Like they seem to be content with having games that just look good, but don't necessarily show every pore of every creature.
Or don't even look good in the case of Minecraft.
Is there fine with games that look like total shit?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's fine too. As long as it plays great. And that's the whole point of it anyways. Yeah, so I don't know. I don't – I maybe I'm crotching.
Understand. Oh, man. Yells at clouds.
There is one thing though. There is one thing I like about it.
Or cloud machines.
In principle, but that still doesn't work out in practice, which is in principle for us as developers, if we can build for one platform, because that thing can be delivered to any device via the internet, via streaming, right? Then our lives get a hell of a lot easier because like the things that make development extra hard are basically
device compatibility.
And so if we just got to take that off of the table for
that's how I already feel about developing for consoles. It's such a relief because it's like there's like an Xbox, there's a Switch. You know what it is. Nobody's like, my Switch has a five-foot wide screen.
Is you have to now do it for both Switch and Xbox.
Yeah, you do, but that would still be true, you know? Unless we were an exclusive on something like Stadia or whatever. Right?
But even then, if someone pulls it up on a phone, it's not just going to work. The controls just aren't – you need to do something.
Coming from developing for
– I'm more talking about the independent builds that you have to have.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Because we have to be managing now for Levelhead. Whatever the fuck it is.
Numerous.
many builds, all of which have then different build requirements and setups. And so the hardware requirements and then the
whole thing. Technology,
like the amount of time and money.
It's literally a person's job.
It is a person's fucking job.
Well, we had things like somebody came into our Discord this past week being like, I can't log in to Levelhead. And it turned out they had set their system clock eight days ahead for some reason. But if you're playing on something like Stadia, it's like you can't get into the system clock.
Yeah,
it's somebody else's computer, right? So like,
and we have to do DRM.
You're not going to have antivirus on there nuking the game because like you can't.
I get how it's good for devs. I just don't know who's.
But even that though, because like, that's the thing is where in the reality that situation doesn't actually come to be though, right? Mm-hmm. Because that still has to go to a device. And so unless Xbox has Stadia on it, which I do not see happening, right? then. Now everybody has to buy something. They have to buy something that plugs into their TV and now is their Stadia like device, right? So I don't know. And now also everything is guaranteed to have a minimum best case scenario of 20 milliseconds of lag on it between inputs and responses, right?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see how it pans out.
So
we sure will.
Beastrostradamus isn't particularly pumped about this. Apparently.
I don't know.
Beastrostradamus says, I don't fucking know.
I think it's one of those things that because – So unlike VR, which is delivering an experience that nobody actually wants.
I disagree with that. I mean, strapping
a thing on
your face.
People
want the experience, but they don't like the cost.
Yeah. It's delivering a new experience, right?
Yeah.
And so people have to figure out how to manage that. Saying this, something that nobody wants was not the right thing to say. But they're delivering an entirely new product, right? It requires new ways of thinking, new all kinds of stuff. There's not a demand there. You have to create it and so on and so forth. Delivering games via, streaming services, the market's already there. People understand what a game is. People play games and it's just a different way of getting it. So I think I don't think the barrier for that is nearly as high as it is for something like VR.
Yes. Oh, yeah, totally.
I think it's just weird enough and interesting enough, especially because what everybody wants today is full cross-platform everything. Like the dream that everybody has, I can buy a game once and I can just get to have it. I get to have it everywhere I go. And we are no closer to that dream than we ever have been because of the fact that every store is separate and so on. And so I think there are various pieces of this dream that I think it's possible. I think it's possible that there really is a market for this. I can't see it. I feel like it's possible that it's really there and that this could open up something interesting. But is Google going to be one that does it? I don't know.
Is it the time?
Is it the time? Is the tech
I'm dubs.
Ready?
I'm soups dubs.
Is the
soups
cost of, is the cost of bandwidth ready? Is the other thing too, right?
Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. All right, let's
move on.
I don't know. This whole thing is
Stadia confusing. What is happening?
It's confusing to me.
But I'm curious about the tech for the. For like sending the stream, right?
I don't know, man.
Because with Netflix, so Netflix has to spend a fuckload of money on bandwidth, right? Enormous amounts of it. But the caching options available to them are enormous because it doesn't actually if the thing has 30 seconds of lag on it, as long as the audio and the video both are lagged by that much, you can't tell.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter. Two people are having the exact same experience if they're watching the same show, right? So they could, in principle, share a cache and whatever. When you're streaming games, though, there's no opportunities for any of that.
You need a whole dedicated machine.
A whole dedicated machine.
Just for your gameplay.
No caching between the two of you. And it's got to come unfiltered, unadulterated, raw stream to get to you because you can't have any lag. So you can't have any pre-processing to cut down on the – I just don't see it.
Like you said, the economics are questionable. The marketing doesn't make sense. I don't know what this is. We'll see though.
We'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see.
All right, let's get on to some questions. These questions come from our listeners over at podcast.beastgosh.net. Highest upvoted question comes from Fly Hoppy Axe Rompa. If you had $1 billion that could only be spent to solve the problem of discoverability for all indie devs.
For all indie devs.
How would you try to solve that problem?
You can't.
For all indie devs. Yeah, you can't.
You can't because discoverability.
Unless.
Unless. Go dark. Let's go dark.
Sure, go dark.
You need to limit the total number of games coming out. So I would buy.
That doesn't solve it for all indie devs.
It does. I would buy it for. I buy Unity. I buy Unreal. I buy all the engine makers. Jack the prices up just a ton. Kick out most of the devs.
You got to use there your go. $1 billion.
No, what I'm saying is if you kick out the devs who don't satisfy the all indie devs requirement of this question.
What you got to. Well, no, you will because there will be a bunch of people who used to be indie devs but aren't anymore.
Yeah. Oh, I see. So you're just saying make fewer indie devs. Yeah. And
you need to shut down. Unity, so we're Game Maker, and Unreal Engine.
Is what we're doing. We're redefining who all devs are is the solution.
You got to figure out how to use that money to either dramatically increase the world's population
yes.
without increasing the number of independent game developers.
Yes.
That's hard to do with money, though.
It's hard to do.
Mm-hmm. Unless you
– And you've only got $1 billion. So that
you
means
can make
you
a
only
lot
got,
of clones with $1 billion.
Can you?
I think you could probably make like how much four does clone clones.
We can only send like one of them to college.
That's true.
So mm-hmm. –
So that's not going to pass.
No, it won't work. Yeah. So yeah, your options are either to reduce. It's a supply demand question. What I'm trying to get at here.
No, you're right. Yeah.
So
it's a market problem.
Yeah. You either have to reduce supply or increase demand.
Yep.
This question is: can you increase demand for indie games via a $1 billion marketing campaign? I don't know. I don't think so. People, the heart wants what the heart wants.
How much would it cost to buy Unity?
Probably more than that.
That's the thing.
So you can't buy Unity. What you got to do is something nefarious. To destroy Unity from within.
You know, in a way that we still get to use it?
No, that nobody gets to use it anymore.
Okay, so we'll keep using Game Maker because nobody else does.
No, we...
Well, this is that we have to destroy ourselves.
Here's the thing. The only way we can fix this is if we somehow go back to the days of the only
making
way
your own engine.
The only way you're getting a game out is making your own engine because that way there's 9 independent developers in the world.
Right. So the $1 billion, which is somehow both
We got to shut down Unity.
Right.
We got to shut down Godot.
Yeah.
You name it.
But then it's also we have to develop our own engine.
Yeah. No, we're out too. We're not in this either.
Here's what we do. Buy a one-way ticket back in time. Get a patent.
Make yourself a time machine for $1 million.
And then buy yourself a patent when you're back there for some game engine technology. Every time one of these people comes up trying to make a game engine, sue them into the ground. Become
even
a patent
better.
Troll. Yes. Boom.
Even better, go back to before video games existed. Patent the whole idea of video games.
There you go. Never let it happen.
Never let it happen.
The patents only good for 30 years.
Now you don't have any indie devs. Now you don't have a discoverability problem.
Yeah.
Boom.
Problem solved.
Aren't even made.
Can we not?
I don't know. I mean, well, it's interesting. It's like, because it's a weird one. Because I don't think you can solve it. It's not a money problem.
No.
You can't solve it. Well, you can't solve it for all devs.
Correct.
It's a winner-take-all problem, yeah. Right? Or it's not a winner-take-all. It's a
zero-sum.
Zero-sum game, right?
Yeah.
If my game is discovered, it's because
somebody else
I got a spot that you didn't have.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, there's no way to do that.
So the only other option is to somehow create some kind of random game delivery system that you somehow get everybody in the world to sign up for. Mm-hmm. Okay, and you just uniformly distribute all of the games. So I make my game. I'm guaranteed to get 180 players. And so is everybody else because that's how many games versus players there are.
So now we have full equality of discoverability.
Everybody's equal now.
But here the beauty of this is now nobody makes any money.
Correct.
All the developers go away. We solve the problem again.
Boom.
Equalize itself. Because like people exit the market pretty soon. If I'm still here, my next game is going to get 190 players because there's fewer developers. Mm-hmm. Yep. If I can maintain that long enough, pretty soon I'm getting 200, possibly even 300 players. Now I'm competing with Steam.
Watch out.
As an indie developer platform.
I think you already were
right out of the gate.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's a weird one. You can't solve it.
You
can't solve it. You just sort of move the problem around. It's like a bottleneck problem. It's the same thing with production, right?
Yeah.
Like you can't actually ever solve this problem. It just moves.
You just put the problem somewhere else.
Yeah,
it just moves.
Yeah, and because it's a free market, let's say there were half as many indie developers. But the number of players are still the same, which means now the average indie developer is making on average twice as much money.
Yep.
Right? Which means, ooh, it's very enticing to get into the market. Now's a good time. Right? Now all of a sudden, boom, big wave of indie developers and the market crashes.
Yep.
So,
which is basically what happened on Steam.
Yes.
Yes.
100%.
And also
everywhere.
And everywhere else. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really curious to see what things are looking like 10 years from now.
Yeah.
I genuinely can't predict this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, if we take everything as a trend, we will not be making any money 10 years from now. So Littlehead needs to do great.
But also, if you extrapolate the trend, I think there will be more indie game developers than the population of the Earth
10
years from now.
Mm.
So then that's going to be a real – I think we'll just be moving games and money around amongst ourselves.
I think the number of games is leveling off on Steam, though. If I saw the most recent chart from 2019 to 2018, it's actually about the same.
Really?
I think so.
We've hit some saturation
points. I need to look into it, but I'm pretty sure I saw something like that floating around.
Hmm.
So we might be hitting an actual saturation point where people are either falling out or they're like,
it's well, it might also be that
kind of crazy market.
Yeah, that maybe it's also been now that it's been become clear that there's not a lot of value to just being in the market.
Yes.
Because that's the thing, too, is like once the gates opened, everyone was like, fuck yeah, it's a gold rush, right? It turned out it actually wasn't, but people thought that it was. And then as the evidence –
like fool's gold.
as the evidence began to mount that you can't come into – it's an open platform but not an open market. Or I guess what – it's not a market you can just come in and make money on just by being in it. And so now all of a sudden you're like, oh, actually we have to spend a bunch of money marketing and doing all this other shit. And so maybe what we needed to have saturated was the understanding of that. So that people just don't enter the system in the first place.
Yeah. There's it's not just a lottery ticket. You just like, I guess I grind.
It is.
I guess it is.
Yeah, it is.
It is a problem. It is a lottery
ticket. But doing it as that instead of just a guaranteed, thing.
Yeah. But I mean, starting it, it's more equivalent to just starting any other business now, whether it's a restaurant or a startup shop or whatever. I mean, like it's all the same sort of thing now.
As meaning it costs a fuckload of money.
Yes.
Yeah.
To get it off the ground. That's the problem. Getting it off the ground is always the problem, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it's going to be very rare that you just kind of kick that nowadays. You just kick things off with a laptop and a dream, and then you just boom, do a Stardew Valley.
My favorite show to listen to is that How I Built This podcast, because just 99% of the stories are people being like, yeah, for 6 years, just kind of was grinding it out and
getting rejected and losing money the whole time.
And it sucked and it was terrible. And, you know, and then finally stuff started kind of working, but it always comes after this really intense foundational phase.
Even shit like Airbnb was a fascinating one because they were going to pitching to investors, and the investors are like, so you're telling me that your website requires people to go around their own house to make a floor plan basically and take a picture of every room and all of their
job,
all of their possessions
and their address
post it on the internet and then invite complete strangers. Mm-hmm. Give them a key.
And that strangers will want to go into other strangers' houses to stay there.
But this is why I don't know about the Stadia thing.
Exactly.
Because that also sounds like a terrible idea to me.
Yeah, you're like, there must be something you're missing. Or not. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because for every Airbnb, there's like 1,000 other things that were genuinely terrible ideas.
Well, that's the whole survivorship bias, right?
Yeah.
I was listening to a podcast a couple weeks ago, and somebody was referring to this as denominator – oh, shit, what is it? So instead of survivorship bias, it was something about like not knowing about the denominators, like denominator
blindness.
Basically denominator blindness, but I can't remember what word to use. Anyway, same idea.
What you're seeing is the one instead of the one out of 1,000.
Exactly, yeah. Which I thought that's actually a clearer and more generic kind of way of thinking about that.
You're not thinking about everybody below the line.
Yeah, exactly. Because that can be for failure cases or success cases or for whatever. So the whole idea of like survivorship bias – it doesn't actually mean the thing that wins. It's just relative to all the things you don't know about is what that's supposed to be. Survivor of like the signal, basically. And so
questions, how big is the denominator?
How big is the denominator?
And you can't know because
it's mostly invisible.
Yeah. It's people who tried a thing and it didn't work and then they just carried on.
Yep.
And they didn't make a big deal out of it and you're never going to hear about it. Or even if they did make a big deal out of it, you're still never going to hear about it.
Yep.
Interesting. Okay, let's get on to the next question from Jabvira Sappyflat, who says – we ask you guys a whole lot of questions, but what kind of questions do you have for us?
Mm.
And how would we answer them? Which is, I like the utilitarian approach here. How would you answer that? Let's get to that one
from
first.
A practical standpoint, is the wood.
Yeah. If we did send questions out into the ether, out at our listeners, how would they respond?
Probably you do it via Discord or Twitter, essentially, and then you just have to respond in there.
Or just you just submit it as a question in the at podcast.bscotch.net.
Yeah, but that's not a question, so.
It's not a question, and also we won't know what you're talking about, probably, because we don't remember what we said in the podcast.
So we should be sure to preface your answer with the question.
Yeah. What question do you have for the listeners?
Well, so this is kind of tough because this is basically we're throwing a question out at a sort of diverse group of generic nameless slash faceless entities who we don't actually know who's listening.
But you know they're interested in podcasts talking about games.
Maybe.
Maybe. Some of them may not be. We don't know.
Because we talk about enough things that you can be interested in like a fifth of it.
And well, I got some questions. If you guys can't figure it out.
I got one, which is is it better to have the power of invisibility or flight? That one I do.
Is that like
I need
a personality test indicators like a Hogwarts school situation?
I just want
to
know.
You want to know from like specific? Are you trying to like do a poll? Like what is it?
I just want
to
know what they think.
Yeah. All like as a hive mind, it's like the average.
Any one of them.
Or just like
if somebody out there conducts a poll, that would be fine. But really, I just want to see some discussion about this. Because
the answer is obviously flight.
My question is, which Starburst flavor do you not eat? I feel like everyone has one, but I was shocked to learn that it's kind of a different one depending on the person.
That you don't eat. I think I eat all of them. I just prefer some of them.
Well, I mean, the lemon. Like, what's the bottom ranking Starburst then for you?
Bottom ranking. Probably the yellow one.
Yeah, definitely the yellow one for me. But I met someone who's pink.
I fucking love pink.
That's exactly. I was like, what?
Someone hates pink?
Exactly.
Get them the fuck out of here. This is like a pineapple on pizza situation. Uh-huh.
Can't have it.
All right. So another question. Is there a thing that you feel like your day can't actually start until you've done that thing? I feel like that's probably a thing.
That's a good one.
For me, it's waking up.
You know what I mean?
Very funny.
What questions do you have, Sam?
Well, aside from the Starburst one.
Yes.
Which is very profound, I feel.
It was profound. Well, you said you had a whole bunch over there, so I'm just opening up the question worm can.
Would you take $1 million to let a complete stranger tattoo whatever they wanted on your forehead?
No.
That's not for you guys. It's for the listeners.
But if they
I wonder what they think.
If they put it somewhere else on my body, definitely yes.
Wait, $1 million though?
$1 million.
Wait, here's a better question.
Because you can just use some of that money to get that thing right back on.
Here's a better question.
Sure could.
Someone's going to pay you $1 million to tattoo something, whatever they want, on your body. The only choice you have is where it goes.
But not what it is.
But not what it is. Where do you put the tattoo?
Where do you put it?
Ass cheek.
Yep, 100%. Or like inner thigh, I feel like.
No, that would hurt so bad.
It doesn't matter if it hurts. Like the back,
You're trying to hide it?
Yeah.
I feel like ass cheek is still pretty well hidden. You know?
Well, I guess it depends on your hobbies.
I'm going
with. What if you're a streaker, you know?
Bottom of foot.
Oh. Ow.
The most painful places are the ones nobody's going to see. You know what I mean? So
apparently, the palm of the hand is very painful.
But also, it doesn't hold the pigment very well.
Yeah.
So the tattoo kind of like goes away after a while.
I got another question. What is the deepest, darkest fear you have about being a weird leather bag with a wet computer inside?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Let's get real dark.
What gives you existential dread?
Just really dig in.
Have you ever heard of the call of the void when you're over
a bridge? We'll only take a 5-paragraph essay on this one. Okay.
Actually, you shouldn't even threaten that because we're going to get a lot of 5-paragraph essays on this. Although you can send us. We have an email address.
We do.
I think it was the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So podcast@bscotch.net.
Podcast@bscotch.net.
Podcast@bscotch.net. Yeah,
pronounce that very clearly.
What did I say?
I think you said it, but it sounded like a dot. No. But it's an at.
Dat.
Podcast dat.
Dat.
All right. I got one final question.
What'd you get?
This is a speculative question. Okay. So there's phases of human existence.
Okay.
Right? Which is like first you don't exist. Then you do, but you're
a phase of existence?
Yeah. It's phase zero. You're zero.
You're just indexing it. I'm not sure that proves
it. so
carry on.
First you don't exist. I think we can all agree on that.
Sure, yeah.
That is what happens originally.
Yep.
Well,
then you're then you're kind of like a weird blob.
Okay.
Right? Then you're kind of like a weird.
You're kind of like a stew.
You're like a stew.
Stew.
Stew of cells. Then you're a humanoid blob, but without a lot of control over anything. Mm-hmm. Right? Then, you know, you start to get bigger, whatever. Then you become an adult.
You skip a whole bunch in there, but
I'm working my way towards it. We don't need to go through the whole process, but you guys know how it works as people.
Yep.
But then you hit an adult, and then it's down, right? Then you kind of like work your way back down into nothingness.
I mean, it depends on how you view it.
Mm-hmm. So
I'm just going to keep on rising the whole time until suddenly it's just nothing again.
Adam's going to ascend to the void.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a point.
There's just two voids. One's down low, one's up high.
Yeah.
I'm just working my way up to the,
the next one. So that's one way to think about it. But my question is, if it was the case that instead of like becoming an adult and then aging and then being done, if you kept going, if you did keep going, what would it be like?
Well,
what would be the next thing so if you were?
If you took aging away or
– No, like if you progressed beyond being an adult and into the next level
as in
thing,
like you turned into an old person. So what's after an old person?
No, I'm saying skipping the old skipping person. Skipping the
old person. Saying like if you remove the old
so
person.
So you're like zygote, baby, toddler,
preteen,
kid,
yeah,
teenager,
hive mind.
Adult. Boom. What's the next
hive mind? Hive mind is the next one.
But what about it makes you think that you would join with other minds?
Because you've been – actually, yeah, because you've been coalescing all the way up, you know? Like
I just remember being 25.
You started as a bunch of cells that coalesce into one thing, and then you're a bunch of ideas, and you coalesce into basically one idea because we all stop being creative open, as we get older and like open to new ideas. And so now you're going to take multiple people and coalesce them together and kind of megazord them. And now you can actually get ideas and stuff. So now you kind of like – it's that causes another expansion the other way, and then – now you're a zygote again.
Whoa.
So now you melt and you just start right back over.
Yeah.
Well, because I just remember being 25 and having this moment being like, oh, fuck. There's no next thing anymore.
Yeah,
there was always a next thing for a long time. Yeah. There was like, one day I'm going to be like this. And then now I'm just like, one day I'm just going to be this, but 40, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to keep getting more.
Because
basically being a person for the first 25 years of your life, it's like being a Pokemon.
Yeah,
like you're evolving the whole time into these new forms, and then you just don't.
But most of it's still artificial because you're like being given new rights and stuff.
Yeah, there's also that too.
Because I think after you're like in mid-teens, because I think you're kind of like baked at that point. Like your brain's still a little, you know, haywire.
It takes a while. It's still going to like
– Oh, yeah. Your brain's constantly baking until it starts to bake too much, you know?
Yeah.
It's
hot.
But
hot leathery.
We also have these like rights that get added, like things you get to do now, you know? And not necessarily rights in even the legal sense, but just like stuff you just get access to that you otherwise didn't have access to. And you run out of those when you hit 21. Actually, no, 25 or 6 now. Something like that. Because
you get to like drive rental cars
at 25.
And then you lose your parents' health coverage
at 26.
Yeah. That's actually when you're
the adult. First thing that you just lose.
Yep.
That's not a new right. That's a go deal with your own shit moment.
To me, that's the marker of adulthood because it's
when you've lost all safety.
It's the time when finally the world just says, this is actually what's happening right now.
Yeah, I'm going to need you.
I'm going to need you to
go deal with your own problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, that's something I always wanted to know was like, it's kind of a bummer that we stop evolving like Pokemon. And I kind of want there to be a next thing.
Well, I mean, I think you put your brain in a computer. Mentally. The thing is like, you still do mentally, I hope anyways, you know, continue to evolve your thinking. And
so your brain keeps going while your body goes either way.
So the question is really, what would be the next evolution of your bod?
Yeah.
Put it in a computer.
Do you?
We're already wet computers. Put yourself in a dry computer.
Do you ascend to another plane? Can you fly?
Do you get tusks?
Do you grow tusks?
Is it flying after you ascend into the plane?
Yes. Well, I mean, you got to get in the plane. Otherwise, how are you going to fly?
Yeah. Very funny.
Yeah. Do you gain the ability to roll into a ball for your work?
Do you
place commute?
Do you grow a hard shell?
Do you grow a shell? Do you get?
Yeah. Do you get some bones on your outside? We only have bones on our inside.
Yeah, I want a carapace.
What if we turn? Yeah. What if we turned inside out?
Well, that's too far.
What if your arms just got real long?
Ooh, yeah. You could just tell someone how old someone would be like, damn.
What if you got more arms? Yeah. What if you knew somebody was in their 40s because they had four arms?
That's what your 40s was about.
That's why they call it 40s.
How many t-shirts you'd need.
When you're 30s, you get your third eye, you know?
Yeah. That's right.
So what happens in your 50s?
When you're
you get a fiefdom?
You get your own serfs and everything.
Yeah.
There's a whole political structure about
it's very bloody.
Yeah. So, I mean, what do you – man, I don't know. I just wish there was a next thing.
You just want
It's also kind of weird that we just have kind of one political system too. You know, it's like you don't as you're moving through life, you don't move into new political systems.
Yeah, everything's boring. It just keeps being the same. I mean, you get like weird, uncomfortable variations of it, but it's really just the same.
Yeah, well, I mean, you just got to keep on approaching it with the fresh, dumb eyes of youth, you know?
The fresh two eyes you started with, because you're not getting a third one, apparently.
But you can,
apparently.
But you can, though, shoot it with lasers, and it's like getting new eyes.
That's true. Adam and I did that. That's why you feel like you haven't evolved yet. So that's still got some glasses.
I gotta get my LASIK.
Those glasses are holding you back.
Get shot in the eyes.
I guess. I don't know. I just wish I didn't have to get shot in the eyes with lasers.
But the other thing you can do is you can start covering yourself in tattoos.
That's true.
Yeah.
Previously, to reach your next level, previously, your bones had to like
grow.
Extend in a very painful fashion. Your brain was sort of fuzzed out because it was just doused in chemicals all the time.
Yeah. So now you got to get tattoos so that those are also painful. Those also change your body and they also confuse you a bit because of the pain while it's happening.
Ooh.
It's a symbol of life.
It's just like growing up.
That makes sense.
There you go.
I'll take it. So there's some questions for our
and some answers.
And some thoughts. I don't know if I'd call them insights.
They're sights.
Outsights. I mean, we looked inside. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean what we saw there was any good, but we did look in there.
Yep. All right, so things are about to get weird in the next couple of episodes. They were not weird this time around, but they're about to get weird.
Nothing has been confusing to anyone.
No.
Everything's been pretty regular. So what's going to happen now is some irregularities.
This weekend we are recording two episodes back to back, which is the question blitz because of the vacations and stuff. So –
and unfortunately, we need a jingle or something for the question blitz, you know?
Yes, Patrick.
Yeah. Kick something.
He actually did make us a jingle a long time ago that was just like, question time.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Because we were like, it would be cool if we had a thing that we could do when we went to take questions, if we could play a jingle.
Did we not like it? I don't remember why
we did, but then we realized that in order to get that jingle in there, Patrick would have to listen to the episode
and figure out where
and he's
happened.
Like, fuck that. And so.
I don't have time for this.
He's like, I'm just checking it for audio quality. I'm getting out of there. Yeah. So we did.
That is why it's very affordable, though. So
we got I'll take it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Alternatively, we ourselves could sing question time.
Question time. We'll do it on Saturday. Yeah.
Okay.
The next two episodes we'll have question time.
Do we have to sing it before each question or only just before we start the session?
Probably just once.
Okay.
Once is enough.
Yeah. So it will be the case that in the next couple of episodes, there will be nothing topical. We will not be talking about news. We won't be talking about...
We're going to ascend into just the classic realm. So, you know, things untouched by time.
Is that what we're talking about? That's just sending, I guess, right? We're just like going to stay right where we are. Because you can descend and you can ascend.
Right, what about sending?
Send.
I don't think you need a word for that because you're already doing it all the time.
Skending?
Yeah. We're just skending.
We're just skending around.
We're going to have two episodes of skend and then back to continuing to skend.
Yep. So we'll see you.
See you then. Anyway, we'd like to thank our producers, Fat Bard and Jen Coster, for putting this podcast together. Thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord running. To get more involved in the Butterscotch community, go to podcast.bscotch.net. We've got links to everything there. And we'll see you
when we see you.
Just in this next weird phase of our existence.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
Bye.